Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 66 of Fan Experience TV. Thank you for all of you returning viewers, and welcome to all your newcomers. I am your host, Mike Kados. Alongside me is my co-host, Rick Molina. Rick, how we doing?
Dual Mike, got the Knicks and the Bucks on right now. Knicks getting beaten by 12. Giannis doing his thing. Thursday night, a lot to get into. And I think where we got to start is there is trouble in Seattle as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks not confirming, not denying that there's those trade rumors. But I think the writing is on the wall, Mike. And I think Russell Wilson will be playing for a new team in September. Your thoughts?
It's hard to think otherwise. They are not adamantly, explicitly saying Russell is our quarterback. There's definitely some heat as far as between him and Pete Carroll. They're not giving Russell Wilson the protection that he wants and asking him to do a lot and to carry that team. And he's still got a couple of good years ahead of him. And it looks to me, look at what happened with Tom Brady. Him and right. Belichick were starting to get at odds and stuff like that.
Right,
and
exactly.
Obviously, that was a very long relationship and partnership there. And it was the same coach his entire career and everything. Russell Wilson had another coach, correct?
No, it's been Pete Carroll. He drafted him in the third round from Wisconsin, yeah.
Wow. So Pete Carroll's been around for a while. But Russell Wilson, he's saying that he's not going to get traded, but also he has a list of teams, and the Chicago Bears being one of them, and Allen Robinson getting signed on a franchise tag. And obviously he made it pretty adamant. He didn't really want to stay there. And so it's either going to be a situation where Russell Wilson's unhappy in Seattle, Allen Robinson's going to be unhappy in Chicago, they'll both hold out, or something of the sort is going to happen like that, because holdouts have been commonplace the last few years, most notably with the Le'Veon Bell, and then it just kept spiraling from there. So I think Russell Wilson to the Bears is quite possibly a decent opportunity to actually happen.
Yeah, and the thing about that is, what are the Bears going to give up, right? Like, you're going to get – if you want Russell Wilson, you have to come up with a package that's just to make Seattle make that deal. And is it going to be three number ones and a couple of number twos? Are you going to blow up your draft for a few years? Are you going to give up, you know, some of your defensive players? They got some studs on that defense. Are you giving up a Khalil Mack? Are you giving up their top players on that roster? So it's interesting how this is going to play out. And it's funny, you mentioned about Brady and Belichick. I think it is like the same thing. Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll have two egos, right? Pete Carroll won national championships. USC comes to Seattle, turns it around. I think he's trying to flex a little muscle, saying he's the boss, and Russell Wilson's, I'm running the show. This is my team, and I run the show, and I have some input in it. And this is the clash of the egos, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out and who's going to win. I think in the end, though, if the player's not happy and you can get a haul – the game has changed. These guys are moving around now. And so if Seattle plays its cards right, I personally don't think you give up on a big-time quarterback like that because they're so hard to find. But if the guy doesn't want to be there and they're going to offer you 3 years worth of draft picks, I think then you have to make that deal.
Yeah, well, they'll get a couple of draft picks back from what they spent on Jamal Adams.
Right.
So right the ship on that front. But you're giving up a Russell Wilson, and who are you going to have throwing to Metcalf and to Lockett and a couple of tight ends over there, and you got a good running game. It's, you know, obviously Seattle is going to be a long ways out, and right. Metcalf's career is going to be affected. Tyler Lockett doesn't have as much time as Metcalf.
Yeah.
Has been great the first 2 years that he's been in this league. So I wonder who's going to end up throwing to him. Are they going to include Mitchell Trubisky or Foles in this deal to at least send a quarterback over there? But what's Mitchell Trubisky going to do, or Foles for that matter? Yeah, you can't expect it to be Foles. It's probably Trubisky if it's anything, just because of the age.
They got to get a quarterback back. They can't sell it to their fans without a quarterback. They got to get a quarterback back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And especially those fans. Those fans are
yeah.
passionate, and they will let you hear it.
Listen, man, if the Jets are taking calls, give them a number two. You're going to get all those picks back. Hey, give them a number two. Send Sam to Seattle, and off we go.
Yeah, would you take it? If you had the choice of giving up a couple of draft picks for Wilson as opposed to Watson, you were adamantly against Watson.
I was against adamantly against Wilson. That trade.
But you're okay with Wilson.
With Zach Wilson getting drafted too? Sure. Yes.
No, yeah. Russell Wilson.
Oh, Russell Wilson. No, I don't think the Jets should blow up their draft for any of the quarterbacks.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I'm saying if Seattle is looking for a quarterback.
Gotcha.
If I'm the Jets, I take the second round pick off their hands and give them Sam Darnold. If they're getting a haul back from Chicago and you need a quarterback and you've done business before, you make the call, you say, hey, second round pick for Sam Darnold or a 2 and a 4 or whatever it is, and make the deal.
Yeah, no, I thought when you said give up a 2, I thought you meant the second overall.
No,
and I was like, you want Wilson? You didn't want Watson. No. I would rather have Watson.
The only Wilson I want is Zach Wilson. They're going to make a trade for Zach Wilson.
Yeah, right.
There it is. That's it right there. But this is fascinating, man. This quarterback, these sort of quarterbacks taking, like, I don't want to play there anymore, willing to hold out. Deshaun Watson, I know he spoke with David Culley today. I don't know how that went. I don't think it went well from what I was reading. I think it was David Culley saying he's our quarterback. But Deshaun Watson's pretty much said, I'm not playing there. And so that's another thing that's playing out in the league. It's just incredible.
Houston, we have a problem.
A serious problem. Doesn't Houston get that the guy doesn't want to be there? He is not going to play there? Like, nothing's going to convince him? Houston's just losing their leverage.
Thank you, Facebook user.
Thank you, Facebook user, whoever that was. Awkward.
I wish Facebook is a little bit more conducive to showing the names.
Yeah.
But Facebook wants all the access to... the StreamYard and whatnot. It's
not happening.
You know, every other service, you can get everyone's names, but yeah. Hey, it is tis the world that we live in.
It is what it is.
You know, how long could this little merry-go-round go about with this Watson? I'm not playing. Yes, you are playing. No, I'm not playing. And it's just the league should know, and these teams should know that these players, when they make their mind up, like they made their mind up, you know, Le'Veon Bell sat out for an entire year.
Yeah, he sat out for an entire year.
Just because he wanted to be paid and to be paid well. And it did hurt him in the long run. It did. But
he lost a year of money. And you should never leave money on the table. But it should be a cautionary tale to players, too. Le'Veon Bell sat out a year, lost $14 million. Then he got back in the league, went to the Jets, and just was not good. That clearly had an effect on him. And now what's he doing? Like, I think he's going to be out of the league next year. I don't know who's going to sign him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see.
Yeah, we will definitely see. And we will be bringing on our guest now. If our guest is ready, please give us a thumbs up. All right, perfect.
All right.
Okay, now help us welcome our next guest, Akeem Vallis. Akeem, how is it going, man?
Mike, Rick, what's going on, my friends? How you guys doing?
Good, Akeem. It's good to see you again, man. How you been?
It's great. Great to see you guys. I've been pretty good. Just got out to Jersey not too long ago and just getting settled in. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Having a lot of fun and happy to have you on the show. So you mentioned Jersey. Yeah, obviously, it's nice out right now, you know. It feels like spring is in full swing now, and you were born in Jersey. Talk to us about living out in Jersey and where your love for sports first started and what teams really hooked you in.
Gotcha. And are you guys, can you guys hear me there? Because there's a little bit of lag on my end, and I just want to make sure
I hear you.
You're good.
It's a little, you know, slower frame rate on the video, but now you're good.
Awesome. Jersey's home. I always South Jersey is a completely different state than North Jersey. And South Jersey is where all the athletes are from. And I kind of just grew up. The older generation didn't really have cell phones until we were damn near in high school. So every day we were outside. When it rained, we couldn't wait for it to stop so we can go outside and play more. Played every sport from basketball, baseball, football, hockey, soccer, karate, everything under the sun. So I've always been an athlete, always had my head in the sports space. And South Jersey definitely brought that out of me.
Awesome. And what teams did you root for, you know, back when you were young kid living out there?
I bleed green and white. So I'm a diehard Eagles fan. I'm a Sixers fan. I'm a Broad Street Bullies fan. I'm a Phillies fan. We were molded into it at young ages. Our grade school, for example, not even grade school, middle school, back when McNabb and T.O. had that Super Bowl run, there was a time where on Fridays, if you wore green and white, you got like a free slushie at lunch. So it was like, it was molded into our brains. Like everyone was an Eagles fan. Like 10 of like all the high schools in South Jersey, like Eagles were the mascot. And I always tell this story is like being in the league, I was never starstruck by no one. Like no one ever starstruck me except two people. My first day when I was on the Cardinals, you know, I'm seeing Tyrann Mathieu, Larry Fitzgerald, all these big time guys walk by. But there's a lineman. His name is Evan Mathis, former Alabama lineman. But he had a short stint with the Eagles. And I remember just seeing him and my jaw just dropped like, holy crap, that's Evan Mathis. And then when I got to Detroit, the assistant O-line coach was Hank Fraley. And he was one of the big time linemen during the McNabb era as well. And every single day I come out to practice like, holy shit, that's Hank Fraley. Oh, my, I cannot believe that. And, so, yeah, I'm a diehard Eagles fan.
I got it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Hakeem, thanks for coming on. So you said you played all these sports, but when did you know that football was a sport that you were really passionate of, that you started falling in love with?
As crazy as it sounds, it wasn't until my senior year of high school. I wasn't good. My basketball was my favorite sport. When I was in middle school, I used to wake up at 4 a.m. to go to LA Fitness to get my shots up because I wanted to go to Duke University. Shout out to Duke, considering they just got knocked out of the tournament
today. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely sad. You hate to see that, especially when it was a walk-on as well, which is damn, bro.
Oh, man, yeah.
I was a basketball, you ask me anytime growing up, I was going to the NBA. And my junior year of high school, I was going to quit playing football because I would show up to basketball season every year out of shape because I'd be in football shape. And I didn't get the fall to actually train and run pickup ball the entire fall, like getting acquainted with the team and all that type of stuff. And I went to boarding school and my basketball coach was also my advisor. And I went to him going into my junior year. Okay. I think I want to stop playing basketball so I can just focus on stop playing football so I can focus on basketball. And he was like, football teaches you things I can't teach you on the basketball court. And that's why we need you here on the team, on the basketball team, but stick with it for one more year. And if you truly hate it, then we'll get you into college playing basketball. And my junior year of just being self-aware was my breakout year playing football. And I realized it was going to be 100 times easier getting a scholarship playing football than it was playing basketball. And here we are now.
Yeah. And you stayed local. You went to Monmouth University, right?
Monmouth University. And it was by choice, but my senior year, I tore my labrum in my shoulder. Ooh, and every school dropped me except Monmouth. Monmouth honored the whole thing. And I didn't even get to play I didn't get to play football or basketball my senior year because of that. It was 2 days before the first game.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, what was your first choice in school if that unfortunate event didn't happen? You know, where would you have gone? I know you said you wanted to go to Duke, but that was more for basketball. Was there a football school that you had in mind?
It was between Boston College and University of Delaware. That first game, like I got hurt and I didn't tell anybody. And like their wide receiver coach is like right on the sideline. And I'm like in a sling and I'm just like, this is terrible. It's and then terrible. Once like UDell was still thinking about giving me a scholarship because I played in like the first two scrimmages before. It's crazy. It's so long ago. Like before senior year started, I played in those scrimmages and I had like really good games. And it wasn't until November when the doctor said I needed to have surgery. And then they just dropped me and they were like, unless you can do a post-grad year, we can't offer you. And that's how that process went. It was crazy, man.
Now, did you always have aspirations to make it professionally in the NFL? I know you went for business administration. What was your main focus? Was it to try your hardest to get to the NFL or you're more on the business side of things?
It was a mix of both, because as crazy as it sounds, back when I was in high school, I did honors theater. And when we were in honors theater, our teachers made us write letters to ourselves that she mailed to us 5 years later. And one of the questions they asked, what are you going to be doing 5 years from now? And I wrote on that letter, like, 5 years from now, I'm going to be in the NFL playing wide receiver. And like, I had that type of confidence or ego or cockiness, whatever you want to call it, the perfect combination of all three. And once I got to college, my degree was business with a concentration in real estate. And when it came to football, I was a bench player. I did not touch the field until my senior year. But those first 3 years on the business side, the girl I was dating, her dad started a house flipping business and he took me under his wing and we flipped about 10 houses together up in North Jersey. So that was like awesome hand-in-hand experience. And on top of that, I was the iPhone repair guy on Monmouth University's campus. I kept myself pretty busy those first 3 years. My senior year, I got my first catch, my first game. Second game, I got my first touchdown, and then started all the games after that. Got granted a redshirt senior year, but finished my career with under 1,000 yards, under 50 catches, and only three touchdowns.
Did you know that you were being scouted by the National Football League? Were you aware of it?
Yeah, because my little brother went to the league. So he went before me, as crazy as it sounds. He dropped out of University of Virginia as a sophomore, and he got drafted sixth round to Oakland in 2015. And once that happened, it was, if he can do it, I can do it type of thing. Like, regardless of how terrible my stats are, I'm like, I'm going to the NFL. Like, screw it. I used to take baths with this kid. And like, in between my senior year and fifth year, I had a conversation with my tight end coach, Jeff Gallo, who's still like one of my biggest mentors to this day. And he was like, I've coached John Nalbone was a tight end that came out of Monmouth, and Jeff Gallo used to be roommates with Miles Austin when Miles Austin was at Monmouth. Gallo goes, you have what it takes to get to the NFL, but if you put your, like, it's literally my senior just ended and I was going to be on campus all summer going into my final year. He was like, if you eat shit with me every single day, you're going to be an NFL tight end. And I put my head down and ate shit and we made it.
That's good. And what was the draft process like for viewers? Obviously, they don't see. We see the combine, but tell us in depth what really goes into that process.
The 4 months leading up to it, or just draft day?
The 4 months leading up to it, up to draft day. Yeah,
it's wild, man. You finish your final season of college. So we finished. We're not a big time school, so we finished in like November. So like November, December, honestly, you're scumming it a little bit because you've been going hard for all these years. It's finally, I can relax for a second. You're going to party hard a little bit, do your thing. Yeah. And New Year's came around. That was like one of the last beers I've ever drank in my entire life. That New Year's Eve party, we had a banger my senior year of college. And after that, it was putting my head down and grinding. So I signed my agent, John Perez, amazing down-to-earth guy. He set me up with a facility called Test in Martinsville, New Jersey, not too far from Rutgers. And literally from January through April, it was 6 days a week. Monday through Friday, it was from 7 a.m. I'd get back around 7, 8 p.m. Saturdays, it was only from 7 a.m. to noon. And it was a flat out grind. We had a nutritionist. My body fat went from 18.6% body fat to 9.8% body fat. And it was I gained weight in that probably gained 6 pounds and lost damn near half of my body fat. So it was an amazing transition. It was a time to put my head down. I lost my girlfriend at that time because I was in straight LeBron, like zero dark 30 mode.
Yeah.
And from there, it was leading up to the draft. When you're not big time, you don't get the combine and all that type of stuff. We had a pro day and teams can come to your campus and work you out. So I think the Seahawks came and worked me out. The Falcons came and worked me out. My pro day, there was about 20 teams there. And then it was the week before the draft, the Cardinals assistant GM calls me and was like, I hate every tight end in this draft, but I just saw your film on my desk and my son has a soccer game on the East Coast and I'm stopping by Monmouth to see what's up with you. And I was like, all right, cool. Let's see what's up.
Yeah.
And he pulls up. The workout went incredible. We had, you know, lunch afterwards. My agent, him, and the guy who was throwing to me just built incredible rapport. Mm-hmm. And he was a straight shooter. He was like, look, we're either going to draft you in the seventh round or we're going to take you as a priority free agent. And teams blow a lot of smoke. So I took it with a grain of salt at the end of the day. But leading in, because like the night before my pro day, I had dinner with Tampa Bay's tight end coach. And okay. he tells me every tight end we bring in is going to make the team, like whether it's practice squad or active. We're getting rid of the fullback from our offense. And we see an F type of tight end like you fitting in perfect with our thing. And I'm like, let's go. Draft day comes around. I think it was day two, and they draft a freaking fullback. Like, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, wow. Like, this is unreal. So like everything that I've heard leading up to it, I'm just like, I might not even make it to the NFL anymore. This is crazy. And then third day comes around. Obviously, that's like the day. That's like the big time day for me. And seventh round comes around and the Cardinals call. I'm like, oh shit. And it was the assistant GM, and he was like, Hakeem, I told you I was going to be honest with you. We're going defense in the seventh round. I tried to stand on the table, couldn't get you, but we want you as a priority free agent. Somebody's going to call you in a few minutes to try and jam your phone until the draft's over so we can sign you. And I was like, cool. I'm like, all right, I'm going to the Cardinals. Hopefully, hang up. Agent calls and goes, hey, the Redskins or the Washington football team just called. And they're thinking about drafting you. And I'm like, oh, snap. And they didn't come to my pro day. I had no talks, no communication with them. But they had just signed Jordan Reed on that fat contract. So my agent was like, you could just be a camp body. Who knows what that looks like? So we really are still leaning towards Arizona, but obviously they draft you. So I'm like, fingers crossed, hoping that the football team doesn't draft me like at that time. As crazy as that sounds, it's like putting all this faith into the Cardinals. And then the Cardinals do call, you know, there's somebody from their personnel department keeps you on the line. As soon as the draft's officially done, we put it in stone, talk to the assistant GM again, square it all out. We're able to negotiate a little signing bonus. And that was draft day. It was insanity.
Yeah.
It was
that insanity. That truly is insane. And I love what you said about, you know, the guy standing on the table trying to get them to agree to you. So I wonder what goes on in those war rooms behind the scenes. So where were you for draft day? You just sitting at your house?
Yeah, right at my house. I think my grandparents might have been there, and maybe an aunt and uncle. Super intimate setting. It's crazy. Like when you look at the pictures from a year before my brother's draft day to my draft day, it's like the same exact thing. It was cool. It was, you know, like the days leading up to it, I tried to stay as relaxed as possible. I think I went to Six Flags during day two of the draft because like I knew I wasn't going, and was just like, let me get my mind off of all this stuff. But yeah, it was super intimate, just right at my family's house. Yeah, I wasn't about to, you see some of these guys have draft parties and going, and it's just, yeah, I'm not about to set myself up for that.
You didn't have a two cell phone situation going on and having to rip your cell phone away from your girlfriend.
Got you. With all the cameras on in the living room. No.
It's just funny that they have so many cameras on some of these players. It's funny to see. So you go to the Cardinals. So talk to us a little bit about when you have the first report, that, you know, that beginning of training camp, and you know, talk to us about that rookie year.
Man, it was a lot. You think my first thought was, I'm getting into real estate as soon as I get to Arizona. And I was like, oh shit, you don't get paid until September and it's April. I was just like, that was like the first shock. Then it was like, all right, I got to make this team. So, you know, time to put my head down and work. Wound up becoming really good friends with our first round draft pick, Rob Kimdichi. And he, because he was a first round draft pick, his signing bonus was a lot more than everyone else's. Yeah. And he had a house before everyone else too. So we wound up getting really close, and I lived with him like throughout that offseason. So that was really cool. Early on in the OTA process, actually, it wasn't even OTAs. It was rookie minicamp. I balled out. Mm-hmm. OTAs, first day of OTAs, I ran a naked concept, caught the ball, and I dove for it. And because OTAs, you don't wear pads, and I separated my shoulder. Oh. And as soon as it happened, I like knew it happened. I'm just like, I literally can't feel from like my ear to my fingers. And I'm like, but I can't like act like I'm hurt yet, because that's how you get cut. It's how you get your settlement, and you're out of the door in hours. It's like when you get hurt, and I'm like, fuck it. Right. I'm sorry for cursing. But
no, you're all good. No holds barred. Go.
Word. Went right back to the huddle, and I'm like, I can't feel my arm. And I hear the play, and I knew I just had a simple, just like flat route, and there's no shot. He throws it to me. I think it was, who was it? You guys remember Jake Coker, Alabama quarterback, years ago? Not okay. Years ago. 20. He won two national championships with Bama during like the Cyrus Jones era. I have a quick flat route, and I'm like, all right, I cannot lift my arm and run the flat route. Of course he throws it to me. and I just snag it with one hand, tuck it, and get some yards. And I come over to the sideline, and the trainer's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I can't feel my arm. And they take me out, all that type of stuff. But like my tight end coach came up to me and was like, hey, I'm glad you played another play, because that's probably the reason why you're still here right now. Like, after you got hurt, like the coach is seeing it as, this kid has some balls for actually sticking in and staying another play. So that was like a pivotal moment, because that was within my first 3 weeks in Arizona. So it was like, it was crazy. So then it was like for the next maybe 2 weeks, I was out and just rehabbing. And it's like it's a weird feeling. You're like trying to make this team, but like you're literally on the sideline at practice, and like you're young and you know how easy you can get cut. But then once I finally got it back and going, did my thing for mandatory minicamp, and then when we came back for preseason, you know, preseason's a whole nother animal. You don't really play much as a rookie until game four. Mm-hmm. And game four is when things get, you know, really real. The craziest story was the morning of game four. It was against the Broncos, and it was probably like 8 a.m. We used to go to this breakfast spot in Arizona called Crackers. And I was sitting weird in my buddy Rob's truck. And when I got out, my back spazzed out. And like, I barely could walk. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, there goes my NFL career. And went to breakfast. Like the whole time I'm at breakfast, I'm like, I gotta go. I like Ubered back to the hotel. I'm like trying to figure out like, what should I do? I'm stretching, I'm heating. There's no massages that like the hotel we're staying at had massages, but they had none in that time frame. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do. It was about 2 hours before the bus were about to leave the hotel. I was like, screw it, because I my back had spazzed out before, and I just went to an urgent care and got some Toradol, and it numbed me out. It's like a non-steroid anti-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I Uber over there. It's the craziest. I go to the doctor, and I'm like, look, I know because of HIPAA laws, you guys can't tell anybody about this, but I'm going to be real with you guys. I play for the Cardinals, and I have a game in the next about 4 hours or so, and I can't walk. My back is screwed up, and I know all I need is a Toradol shot. What can you do for me? And she literally goes, can you sign something for my dad and my son? For my husband and my son? I'm like, sure. And literally 10 minutes in and out, get the shot out of there, Uber back to the hotel, ball out, have a catch that night, played like 30-something snaps, and made the team. And that was my first few months in Arizona.
That's an amazing story. So I know you said you didn't get starstruck, but you were playing with some players by the names of Larry Fitzgerald, Carson Palmer. Was Bolden on the team then, or no?
Anquan? Anquan, he was there for – he wasn't there – I don't know if he was there at first, but I played with Anquan for a little bit. He's a good friend of mine.
So how was it playing with people with those iconic names?
It was awesome, because it was a learning experience in the sense that most people don't realize how much the victory is in the preparation. And you're watching these guys, Pat Pete, Tyrann Mathieu, Carson, Larry, some, like one of 30, like the best in the world at what they do. Most people just write it off for talent in that sense. But yes, these guys are freakishly talented. But when you're watching Pat Peterson for an hour and a half before a practice starts, and he's just working on one step, like just over and over again, and mirroring all these different routes that all these different receivers would run. Or you're watching Larry get all of these catches in, and the last person out on the field doing those type of things. When you're watching Carson rocking, they have these like 3D, almost like Oculus goggles, where you can, like a quarterback is just walking around the hallways, witnessing film, like in a 3D sense, but just doing that. Wow. Like every time you see him, he's got these goggles on. You really realize that's why they're that great. There's not much of a talent gap with anyone. It's confidence for the most part. And where confidence comes in is getting to a level of unconscious competence, which takes an ungodly amount of preparation. So watching all that preparation was unreal to watch and witness.
That's great. Rick, you can take
that. Yeah, no. And so then you went to Detroit. You played a couple of years in Detroit. And was that after Megatron? Had he retired by the time you got there?
Yeah, I was after Megatron. I never got to meet him, never nothing. Because him and Detroit don't have a good relationship. So he wasn't like Barry Sanders would be on the sideline and stuff like that. But I never got to meet Megatron.
But what was it like playing with Matt Stafford and just players like that? Kenny Galladay wasn't on the team, was he?
Oh, Kenny was there. I got to play
with
Kenny.
Oh, he was there. Okay,
I played with Kenny for two years. Kenny's unreal because of how humble he is and how hard he works. Kid doesn't say anything and just balls out every single day. Yeah. Playing with Stafford, man, Staff is he's like my top five. I keep him in top five when we're talking quarterbacks, comparing them like everyone to everyone. Like I, knowing how smart he truly is, having played with other quarterbacks as well, and how good he is. And I think the coolest Matt Stafford quote I've got is, it was the off season after my first year in Detroit. It's me, him, and Luke Wilson, tight end. He's back in Seattle again. We were just doing routes with him for like one weekend. He had his quarterback coach in town, and Staff must have threw 800,000 balls we're just rocking in there for hours. And we was like, yo, can you guys come back tomorrow and do the same thing again? Yo, your arm gonna be all right, bro? Like, you sure? And he was like, it was the most humble, confident thing I've ever heard him say. He was like, bro, this arm is a jugs machine, don't even worry about it. And I was like, you're damn right, bro. I'll see you tomorrow. But yeah, Staff is one of the most down-to-earth guys, leads by example, knows everything there is to know in terms of everyone's responsibility, role, can read defenses, can read just humans on defense and know what you're going to do before you even do it. Audible, change the entire play concept, all that. Coaches are like, what the hell? Why are you doing that? And then that player does that and they're like, oh, good job, Matt. Good job. And it's an unreal thing to watch, like in real time. I'm really looking forward to see how and what he does in LA.
Yeah. And then you finish off with the Giants. So what was that like coming home for you? Sign with the Giants, dream come. Well, you were an Eagles fan, but you're like back in Jersey, right?
Yeah, it was nice to be back in Jersey. At that time, I knew I was going to retire. It was cool because it was, again, being around some of the greats. Like, my locker was right next to, it was Apex to Odell and Saquon. And like, same thing, witnessing some of these greats and how they prepare, same exact thing, like Arizona and how they practice and all of that. In that sense, it was an unreal experience again, because that Giants team was wildly talented, but they obviously didn't have much success that year. I think it was the 2018 season, but it was really cool to be back home. The Giants, as much as it hurts me to say this as an Eagles fan, it's beyond a world-class organization in terms of just the way they treat their players, from practice squad all the way to an Odell Beckham. And like, meeting guys like an Odell Beckham, for example, where somebody, a fan or somebody else, might think he's a cocky person or something of that sort. Again, one of the most down-to-earth humans out there, just treats everyone like a brother in that sense. And that's what every organization, every superstar that everyone thinks is a bad person is like, for the most part.
Fair enough. Awesome. I want to just jump back just a tad bit. What's it like playing on Thanksgiving?
Never got the opportunity, my friend. So my first year in Detroit, I was still in the practice squad for the Thanksgiving game, but it was cool being on the sideline and being there for a Thanksgiving game. Yeah. Second year in Detroit, I got cut the Monday of the week of Thanksgiving. And I'm honestly, it's because Tavon Wilson had dislocated his shoulder and it wasn't enough for him to go to IR because he was going to be back in 2 weeks. And he was making way more than me. So they're not about to cut Tavon Wilson before they cut me. And they needed to bring another safety in for 2 weeks. So they cut me. And honestly, it was an amazing feeling because I don't know how long it's been at that point that I got to spend Thanksgiving with my family because of football, just all over the years. Mm-hmm. So for that year, I Airbnb'd like a nice house out in Michigan. And my whole family came out to Michigan and we had Thanksgiving like all together. And it was awesome. It was an awesome experience. And so that, I've never got to play a Thanksgiving game yet, but Ford Field gets ridiculous on Thanksgiving. It's a pretty cool experience just to witness and be on the sideline for.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And I just lost my train of thought real quick. but I want to touch on the TikTok stuff, but I want to get your take on you. Obviously, we know Stafford's going to L.A., and we were talking a little bit about Russell Wilson and everything going on with maybe going to Chicago. Just give us your take on what all these carousels going around the NFL, and also your quarterback Carson Wentz getting traded, being an Eagles fan, and your take on that.
I think, I don't know if Russell goes to Chicago. I don't know. I've just heard things about Chicago in terms of who they would have in at quarterback in that sense. I don't know if he'll go to Chicago. It'd be interesting to see him in Chicago. It also, I think it'd be super interesting to see Russell. And I don't look at much buzz and what people are saying. If he went to New York, I think that'd be interesting for him in terms of the Jets, just for his brand. I think Russell's just an all-around personality.
Yeah.
He's got his own media company himself, and they're absolutely crushing it. Deshaun Watson, I don't know if you saw today that new head coach, I think they set his ass up. I don't know if you saw that press conference, and it was just like, nope, Deshaun Watson staying here. And it was just,
yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I don't know.
We read the report. Yeah. They just, one side saying one thing and Watson isn't buying it.
I'm not playing for you. What don't you get about
that? I don't know what's going to happen there. Carson Wentz, that's a really hard one for me because I think he's super smart. I remember my rookie year coming in to the Cardinals. I believe that was Carson's rookie year, 2016, I believe. We had also, for rookie minicamp, we had an undrafted free agent from North Dakota State as well. And I was like, yo, tell me about the hype. I don't even know who the hell this dude was. And like, why is everyone so high up on him? How did a dude from a D1AA school go that high in the draft, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, yo, Carson didn't even have a playbook. He called every single play. He had the ultimate freedom. Like you see that in the NFL, but as a college quarterback, it's unheard of. And every NFL scout knew that. Then obviously going into his Super Bowl season, getting hurt, then watching Nick Foles come in, beautiful thing to see. Philly fans are hard, man, and Philly will rip you apart whole. And I think we witnessed that happen to Carson Wentz in real time. I think he'll thrive in a different city. I think there's way too much pressure being in South Jersey, Philadelphia area, playing for the Eagles. It's not for everybody, I don't think. I'm wildly excited for Jalen Hurts. I think he's just been not slept on, but slept on in a sense.
Yeah.
I think he's quite complimentary in a sense to Kyler Murray. It'll be exciting. I don't think Kyler's a whole different animal when it comes to his shiftiness and elusiveness. That's a hot take right there. But, but I'm excited to see what Jalen Hurts can bring to the table because, I don't know, Eagles seem to be doing some sort of rebuild themselves as well. I think Zach Ertz, they're looking for a trade for him. Oh. Brandon, what do you call it, the linebacker, DN, they're looking for something for him. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, when did you first start noticing the sort of content producing, the influencer, TikTok, Instagram? When did this first start? When did you first start saying, I like this, I like doing it, I want to start pursuing this a little more? When did this first start for you?
Right after I retired, started to pay a little bit more attention into content and what it could do for me. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn was the first platform I took seriously. I did a speech and I put a 1-minute clip out on LinkedIn. I had 300 connections. And it got 55,000 views. And I was like, whoa. And from that, I was a guest on 15 podcasts. I got 5 paid speaking engagements from it. And I was like, all right, I'm going to triple down on content a little bit. And I was already speaking. So I was just taking content from my speeches and just questions and answers from some of those talks and just repurposing it into content for all the other platforms. Next post on LinkedIn got 50 views. Next one got 17 views. And the next one got 88,000 views. And I was just like, all right, something's happening here.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm good at this content thing. Let me take it even more seriously. And Joe tripled down on content, started to slowly but surely build a team around me to help editing content in that sense. And then towards the end of that year, this is 2019, is when I launched Perspective Global Media. When we first started, we were just working with real estate professionals and some small business owners on the Facebook and Instagram side of things. Once the pandemic came around in 2020, we made a couple pivots. And by June of 2020 is when, January of 2020 is when I first hopped on TikTok. I must have posted 30, 40 times and I did terrible. I went from 0 to 55 followers. I was just taking some of those best clips from LinkedIn that got 55,000, all those did really well on LinkedIn and just downloading them and uploading them to TikTok and they did terrible. And I'm like, damn, this platform just must not be for me. And I heard a piece of advice from Gary Vee saying to consume for 5 to 10 hours within your niche and then start putting out content. So I started to consume other sports creators, other real estate professionals and other entrepreneurs, understanding the contextual nuances of how they were showing up within like how they were communicating to their audience, how to bring value to their audience. Because most people on platforms like TikTok or any other platforms, it's all about context. Like content matters, but context matters even more. It's like showing up to a college party as a narc. It's yeah. like telling the same joke that you told at work and then coming home and telling that same joke to your 11-year-old. It's a completely different context.
Yeah.
You have to show up at different places as it's not, some people frown upon it, but it's, that's how you win at communication. Communication is everything at the end of the day. But after taking those 5 to 10 hours in consuming, it was June 1st of 2020. And I made a bet with my admin. He had access to my bank account, and essentially, we're not going to get political here, he essentially would donate to my opposing supporting political party every time I didn't post, because I had to post every single day. That was the bet. And that was enough motivation for me to post every single day in June. And after a week of posting, I went from 55 followers to 22,000. By the end of that month, I was at 82,000. In 6 weeks, I was at 100,000. And that was when I was like, damn, this TikTok thing is real. Let me triple down on this. And now we're here, over 250,000 followers on the platform.
That is incredible.
That is.
That is amazing. And is TikTok your main source, or do you use Instagram and Reels a lot, or is it mostly TikTok?
I actually haven't used Reels at all. I need to. That's real. Just being a practitioner, I need to hop on it. But right now, I've just been squeezing the fruit yeah. out of TikTok, because one, you know, I run a TikTok consulting agency. So it's proof of concept to my clients and brands that I want to work with and that I already work with, trying to learn what's working, what's not working. Like, Reels matter, but I haven't focused on Instagram these past probably 8 to 9 months. But I've grown more on Instagram in these past 8 to 9 months because of TikTok via yeah. without doing anything else. I was at 6,000 followers when I retired from the NFL, and now I'm over 10,000 followers on Instagram. I equate most of it to TikTok, because TikTok's yeah. has a fluid UI UX of going from your profile on TikTok straight to someone's Instagram profile, throw you a follow, go back to TikTok, and 5 seconds has gone by.
Wow.
Yeah, it really is. It really is very fluid as far as that goes. And I feel, you know, as if you can't message people on TikTok unless you both follow each other.
And a lot of people just go right to Instagram.
So you go to Instagram. Yeah. So they're promoting Instagram in a way.
They definitely need to work on their messaging. They need to work on their messenger side of the platform. But I do understand, because the platform did start off skewing so young. At the beginning, it protects people. Yeah. You can't even send DMs if you're under 14 on TikTok. They may have changed that, but I know for a while you can't send messages if you're under the age of 14 to prevent, you know, bad things happening.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's funny that you said you went from 0 to 55 followers. We just started a new TikTok account just the beginning of February. And right mm-hmm. now we're at 55 followers. Let's go. So I'm hoping, but we're trying to be more consistent. We're trying to post once or twice a day and just trying to get the narrative out and the story out for Playing the Field. I know we all talked on a Zoom a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are telling our story the right way, but there's just a lot of nuances. And I think the algorithm has changed. So it's not... You can't go as viral as you could have in June 1st, 2020.
I would debate. I would debate that.
So I would. You're the one that knows more than I do. Yeah. So
let's have
take us to school.
Yeah.
I would debate it, and I've got a couple of 2.0 on the advice. I'm trying to think how long ago we talked, and I don't want to repeat the advice, but one.
Probably January.
Yeah, then I definitely didn't tell you guys this. One, with a podcast, one thing I just wildly recommend to you, anyone in the audience who has a podcast, is have your guests, like, I would set your show up where after the show is over, whether it's before the show or even during the show, for example, right now, like, I'm having a fluid conversation with you, but my right hand, you can't see my right hand. I'll record every question you ask, I'll record it, boom, boom. So now I have it in 9:16 aspect ratio, so I don't have to take this square with our three squares and crop it and zoom it. That just doesn't do well on TikTok. Would rather you have a full screen video. It's just going to over index and do way better. So piece of advice I always have is, now for people who have podcasts, save one question, like something that you know is going to bring value to your TikTok audience, and ask that guest to, hey, can you, or, and go back to every guest you've already had and ask them, hey, can you answer this one question? Answer it in selfie mode and just text it to us. And now take that answer and post-produce it for TikTok, because now you have it. It's crystal clear. It's full screen. Yeah. You can add your contextual nuances. If it's me, you can take my highlights from the NFL and throw it over it and B-roll it and all that type of stuff. Wildly important, because I'd argue 70% of my viral videos came from me being a guest on other people's podcasts. And like the views that I get compared to the amount of subscribers that those shows have aren't even, it's not even close in that sense. And people are missing out on that, if that makes sense. TikTok is the most democratic platform out there when it comes to virality and when it comes to, you know, getting noticed in that sense. And I think you have to keep changing. You have to keep adjusting. We get super comfortable with the type of content we put out and we get nervous to have a piece of content flop. That's good. Having a piece of content do bad, that's just like, no piece of content on TikTok is going to hurt you. When we talked in January, I don't know if I knew this metric, but 80% of the people who view your content on TikTok don't follow you. So if you have, like, the only thing you can control with TikTok is output, quantity. You can't control, like, quality is subjective at the end of the day. You might think you created the Mona Lisa of TikToks and it gets 17 views and it feels like you got kicked in your nuts. It's the worst feeling in the world. But it's about quantity. How much quantity of content can you put out? And you being in a sports type of realm, there's, because ESPN doesn't have super charming and remarkable people like you to put out content all day about their own thoughts and hot takes, because half of the hot takes on there are just bullshit, in my opinion. You have the opportunity to be ESPN, to be breaking news. Like during Super Bowl, I probably dropped 4 or 5 TikToks mid Super Bowl. Oh, AB just did a move on Tyrann Mathieu and he scored. Go to Twitter, screen record, crop it, boom, add my 2 cents. AB versus Tyrann Mathieu, goods on goods, runs a quick rip, boom, gets the catch, touchdown. Love to see it. 100,000+ views. Everyone has that opportunity, but everyone's not thinking of themselves as ESPN. Think of yourself as a, Gary Vee says this quote the best. Think of yourself as a media company and whatever the hell else you do. So media company, think of yourself as ESPN, because ESPN is not, ESPN is on TikTok, but they're showing and post-producing the same highlights that they have that they're showing on SportsCenter and all that type of stuff. You have the advantage by being in the dirt. And the only way David beats Goliath is by acting like David.
Wow.
Yeah. Well said. Great advice. And can you tape that in selfie mode and send it to us?
as crazy as it sounds, because I was mentioning all of it, that's probably the first question that I did not record, because I was showing you my phone and all that type of stuff, right? That's how it goes, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. So where do you see this space going? You're into content, TikTok. Is there something else on the horizon that's coming out? Because TikTok came out of nowhere. Is there something else on the horizon coming out? And how big do you see this going?
So one, TikTok came out of nowhere, but 2016 is when Musical.ly started. And 2016 is 5 years ago. So Musical.ly was out. It was happening. It was more of a music dancing type of platform. 2018, 2019, Charli D'Amelio had her moment. And Charli D'Amelio is the turning point. There's always those turning points for every platform. Like Snapchat was dead. And then DJ Khaled got stuck on a freaking jet ski out in Miami. I don't know if you guys remember that. And he literally like Snapchatted the entire experience. And after that happened, he got millions of followers. And then every brand started working with him. And then brands woke up and got on Snapchat and everyone was on Snapchat. Charli D'Amelio, she's got over 100 million followers. Most people hate on her and her whole crew and all that type of stuff. Not the best dancer in the world, but she capitalized on where the attention was and empowered a lot of women to now dance freely, have fun with it, and gain a following from it, which is, I think, is amazing. And I think in 2020 or 2019, I think she amassed like $40 million from the brands that she's worked with, the Super Bowl commercial she was in. And it's like a 16-year-old girl can do that, which is one and incredible. But 2019, 2020, TikTok has literally adjusted its algorithm because they didn't want to be generalized as a dancing platform. So now their content sways more towards informational, educational, and compelling storytelling type of content, which is creates a whole new opportunity. Where is this platform going? So when you think of organic reach, and platform growth, then I can post a video today, have no followers, and be at 20,000 at the end of the week. The only reason why you can do that on TikTok is audit your closest 20 friends. And chances are all of them are on TikTok. Chances are all of them have never posted a piece of content in their life on TikTok. Organic reach is all about supply and demand. There is a massive demand for content on TikTok because everyone's on it and everyone thinks it's corny to take TikTok seriously. That's where all the opportunity lies. Until you see your best friends, your brothers, everyone treating TikTok like Instagram, it is it's a gold mine because everyone, it's all the attention is there. You compare Facebook to Instagram to TikTok. Facebook's daily average consumption time is 12 minutes a day. Instagram's daily average consumption time is 25 minutes a day. TikTok's daily average consumption time is 85 minutes a day.
Wow.
That attention, the only way for you to have an infinite For You page is the fact that every post gets an amazing amount of organic reach. And it's the reason why TikTok's algorithm is the most democratic algorithm out there. If your content is good, not because you think it's good, because the audience thinks it's good, it'll do well. If it's not good, it won't do well. And it's from a long-term standpoint, I don't know, I could get shut down tomorrow, but I've built a community. That brand is transferable at the end of the day. The only way that Jake and Logan Paul are still fighting fighting Floyd Mayweather in 2021 is because of, you know what I'm saying? That's everyone's right. Oh, what if TikTok becomes Vine and it shuts down? Who cares? If you build a brand, that matters. If it's a meaningful brand, not because you went viral once and just, you know, had that viral moment and didn't do anything after it. If you actually create a meaningful brand, brand is forever at the end of the day, and it's transferable no matter where you go. And I think people miss out on that fact. So I don't know what's next. Clubhouse, 100% next. I don't next and or happening, but it might be a short-lived next. So I tell everyone, if you have an iPhone and somebody with an invite, you've got something to say, or you're trying to listen to people say some stuff, get on Clubhouse, because the same thing with Clubhouse, it has a serendipitous effect that you can wind up in a room with your idols, in a sense. Like, I've been in a room with, I was in a room with Darren Rovell, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Darren Rovell. And we're just having a casual, it's crazy because we're having a casual conversation about NFTs, and this is like a month and a half ago, and I had no idea what the fuck he was talking about. And like now today, an NFT goes for 69 goddamn million dollars at the Christie's auction, which is just crazy. I was in a room and freaking, what's his name? Dana White is listening in the audience. I'm in a room and I'm talking to freaking Mark Sanchez. Like, obviously he's a colleague from being on the field, but I've never met Mark Sanchez. It was super cool having a conversation with him. Yeah. Having a conversation with Baron Davis. And it's like everybody could serendipitously wind up in a room with these different people and have conversations. Do I think when the world opens up more, will Clubhouse decline a little bit? Possibly, but because we're limited when it comes to speaking events and networking events to our local area, Clubhouse allows you to have conversations with people around the world at any time of the day. You can hop on a Clubhouse at 3 a.m. and have a meaningful conversation with someone or a group of people. And those conversations, depending on who they are and what you're talking about and what you do, can lead to business results.
All right. So that's amazing advice. And you are 100% correct on that whole massive demand and there's no supply. Like,
not to cut you off here, actually, Mike, because I'm going to forget this thought if I don't.
Here you go.
LinkedIn is wildly slept on. LinkedIn, I would put the same amount of eggs in the basket as LinkedIn as I do with TikTok. If I had like just another 3 hours in a 24-hour day, if we had 27-hour days, I'd be spending way more time on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn, there's actually data out on it. TikTok has still been hiding a lot of its full-blown data. LinkedIn today has 675 million daily active users. So back to supply and demand. So 675 million daily active users. Of the 675 million people who are on LinkedIn looking to consume something that's going to bring them value, only 3 million people put out content on a weekly basis. Everyone on LinkedIn shows up in their suit and tie trying to be the resume best version of themselves. I tell people, show up on LinkedIn in your sweatpants and just be yourself, and you will absolutely dominate it. Like, it's scary the success you will have on LinkedIn, because so many people have PTSD of LinkedIn being a place of just get my endorsement, be professional, and just do that. Yeah. Take your best tweets and throw them on LinkedIn. It'll do well. Take your hot takes about sports and throw them on LinkedIn. It'll do well. Just people don't do it because they think, oh, I got to be this yes, sir, no, sir version of myself. And if there's anything you take out of this interview, LinkedIn, because on top of that, the medium income of a LinkedIn user is $70,000 a year. So if you got something to sell, you got something to do, and it requires money on the back end, people are humans at the end of the day. Obviously, bring a little bit of context. Don't just download Facebook, upload LinkedIn. Bring context, but then bring value. LinkedIn is the place to do it.
Great. Great advice. And I definitely agree. LinkedIn is a huge opportunity. And I've loved it just growing over the last year, but I definitely need to post a lot more. We have this show streaming live to it 2 days a week. So at least we got that going on.
Something to consider. Something to consider, and so, I'm sorry to cut you because I'm just going to forget if I don't bring this up.
No, we need the bring on the value.
When it comes to LinkedIn, videos aren't doing as well lately. If you just check out some of my, I haven't posted in a little bit, but my most recent posts, my last couple posts were carousel posts. Do carousel posts. Essentially take PDF, like this podcast interview.
PDF, yeah.
You could take a clip, video, cool, it'll do really well. But if you now take Hakeem's best three pieces of advice for TikTok and turn it into a four-part carousel and put that on LinkedIn, it'll do 100 times better than any video you'll put out on LinkedIn. It's like LinkedIn, just for some reason, is over-indexing on carousels. Like it could be the most, just look at some of my carousels and see how simple they are. I don't take that much time to put together. Probably a little bit easier than post-producing a video piece of content.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, carousel posts on LinkedIn for some reason are crushing it.
Good to know.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I tried to squeeze that in there.
It's okay.
No. I was going to say, back to the TikTok, you with the whole supply and demand thing. So we have 55 followers, and I just started following a couple of people back, but I'm only following people that have content. And I think it's about 12 people. Of the 55, about 12 of them have content. And I'm not even talking like they posted yesterday. I'm talking like they posted at some point in the last 3 years.
That was the biggest thing that I noticed when I first started going on LinkedIn, on TikTok, was I would audit all my followers. But once you get a lot of followers, you on Instagram, you can scroll and see every single follower you have. If you're already auditing your followers, I would honestly, because you guys are going to crush it and you guys are going to grow on a weekly basis, maybe every 3 days or so, just go through and audit who's following you, because there might be some big time people following you, but you'll miss out on it. If I don't know what the number is, I think it's 400 or 500 is how many people you can see, but it's only the most recent 500 people that have followed you, and then it just stops. So you can't just, I can't see my 250,000 followers and like just audit and see who follows me. So just start to try and implement that into your routine of just like consistently going to check, okay, these people follow me. But first thing I noticed when I was doing that was like, no one's posting content.
Yeah, no, it's truth. Rick, you have anything for him?
No, I'm good, Hakeem, man. It's a pleasure to always talk to you, man. I feel like I like you're genius, like you're smart. So you just said something about I'll do these 3 points or something like that. Like you think in such a creative, and just for me, it takes so much time to come up with something, and you come up with it in 20 seconds. You come up, I'll do these 3 points, and it's incredible.
I appreciate that, man.
Keep doing the work, man. I'm gonna keep watching.
The process.
That's right.
So why don't you tell all of our audience out there more about Perspective Global Media, right? That's the name, Perspective Media, and how they can find you and get a couple of more tidbits and like a little consultation, sit down with you.
100%. I appreciate that. So Perspective Global Media, we're a TikTok consulting agency. Honestly, if you go right to my TikTok account, there's a link in there that we just do free, like a 10-minute just TikTok consulting. And I just wind up going over, and it wind up being like 25 minutes every time. But that's a great place to just link up if you want some TikTok help in that sense. My email address is just Hakeem@perspectiveglobalmedia.com. LinkedIn is probably the, like outside of shooting me an email, LinkedIn, just Hakeem Vallis is one of the better ways to reach out, find me, and collaborate in some way, shape, or form.
Awesome. Hakeem, again, it was an absolute blast having you on. We're going to keep going strong on this new TikTok campaign, and we're going to try and put out different content and just try and find out what works. The other day we had one that went 3,000 views, but only 17 likes, but you have one that went 200 views and 150 likes. So I don't understand how they work things.
It's how it goes. It's interesting when you look at some of the engagement metrics on there. Sometimes it's just ass backwards. But as you start to get going and going, you'll start to figure out the consistency of it. Okay. Don't be scared to continuously just test. Don't be like, make a video of you making coffee in the morning if you feel like it. And just don't think that's going to hurt you. Because again, every post you put out, 80% of those people have 0.0 idea who you are. So it's reintroduce yourself but it's a new opportunity to reintroduce yourself every time. It's not like everyone who sees every video knows even who the hell you are, because the most part, they don't.
So don't make it like linear. Don't just, you could literally have the same exact.
But it doesn't have to be like a linear story.
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah, if you start talking about something one week, you could still go back in time and still talk about it in a different way or put a little extra spin on it. And like today I posted a video promo saying that you're going to be on.
We can do edit it. I didn't see. I'm so sorry, bro. Damn.
It's all good, man. It's all good.
What was I going to say? My last piece of advice. I got this piece of advice and I took it and I ran with it and it got me, I don't know, 30,000+ followers in a couple of days. Remix, as you start to grow and as you start to get videos that are hitting,
yeah.
Some people, what they do to try and hack it is just repost it. I say don't do that. There's no sense in doing that. But remixing the video is valuable. Meaning if you make a video and let's say it was, what's that dude's name? Denzel Wims, when he was fighting that dude from, I made a video on that. And this isn't,
I saw that, yeah. That.
You saw that, yeah. So if that video, for example, went wildly viral and got like 1 million views, remixing that video would be me doing another video talking about that same fight, if that makes sense. Like, for example, here's the pure example that I actually did. You can go back and just check. Months ago, I made a video. It got like 900,000+ views, and I was running a 5-yard like swing, like a hook swing route against the Dallas Cowboys. And it was the stupidest video. It was just like, man or zone, this guy's dropping, boom, got the catch, whatever. 900, yeah. I'm like, all right, how do I remix this video? Somebody asked me a question of, as painful as it sounds as an Eagles fan, someone asked me a question of what's my favorite stadium that I've ever played in, and it was AT&T Stadium. So I made a video doing that same play of me catching the 5-yard swing hook, but I was answering the question of what was my favorite stadium. And I was like, favorite stadium, kills me to say as an Eagles fan, was AT&T Stadium. Here's a time where I got a quick 5-yard hitch, blah, 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 and retold the story of me catching the 5-yard hitch. But that video then got 600,000+ views. But that's remixing. So as you continue to post, as you continue to grow, every 2 weeks, every month, just audit. Okay, these 7 videos went viral. How do we recreate that same concept? You don't want to just triple down and make your whole strategy about that concept. But remixing concepts that do really well will, like I just said, it got me 30,000 followers in 3-4 days because I just did it on 4 videos and all 4 of them did as well, or some of them did even better than the original that I posted. Don't delete videos. Everyone deletes videos when they don't do well. Put it on private instead of deleting it.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned that part. Yeah. Definitely don't. Gotcha. Don't delete them. It does horrible. And do you prompt people to follow you?
So start doing that. So I got that piece of advice during my, I have a podcast called Don't Sleep on TikTok, just to internally get more value on other people who are crushing on TikTok. And I had this guy named Daniel Isles on the show. He does like, this dude lives in Alaska and he just drops, he used to be a full-time CPA, but because of TikTok, absolutely crushed it. And now he's a full-time content creator and just does brand deals all day. And that's absolutely incredible. But I duetted one of his videos where he was talking about me and how I bought my first apartment building when I played for the Cardinals. And I duetted it just eating waffles from a Waffle House, just saying, yeah, check that out. I didn't really have to add 2 cents to it. I just wanted to just like repost it. Cause like that's, and I wasn't even going to do it at first. Like my admin sent it to me. I was like, hey, you might want to duet this, like maybe eating waffles or something. I'm like, it's almost cringy because it's like talking about me and I get uncomfortable in that type of situation. I was like, screw it. I did it. And it got me 26,000 followers in 24 hours. And I was just like,
wow.
And I didn't even understand why the hell it went. And it wasn't like my most viral video in terms of video views. It only got 1.1 million views. But at the end of that video, he has a call to action saying, follow Hakeem for more content like this. And I asked him about just like how, like his follow process and all that type of stuff. And I've got to go back and re-listen to the episode. But he mentions like there was a point where he started to add the call to action. And it like it was night and day. I can't remember how many hundreds of thousands of followers he got in a short amount of time from changing and adding that. But call, you don't have to do it every post because I don't do it every post. But call to actions, like, you know, follow me for more, you know, sports stories like this, or follow me for more stuff like this. And like that, it's most people don't follow you anyway. It's just a quick prompt. Oh, maybe I should follow this person. It's just a quick reminder to do that. So yeah, it, I would say yes over no, like more than not, if that makes sense.
Awesome. That this has been amazing.
It's been a real pleasure, man.
It's been amazing catching up. Everybody go and follow him. Respective Global Media on TikTok at Hakeem Vallis, and of course LinkedIn Hakeem Vallis. So those are the best routes to find him and talk to him. Hakeem, thank you again. It was an absolute pleasure.
Gentlemen, wishing appreciate you, the best. You guys. Appreciate Hakeem, you guys having
all the
me
best,
show.
Man. I'll be following.
And send up some selfie.
I'll do that.
good tidbits and we'll
Email me your
there.
Number after this, and I'll just text them over to you. I'll text them over to you.
All right, man.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Have a good one.
All right. Have a good one.
Oh, man.
Information galore.
But it's amazing.
Information overload.
It's amazing. Like, it's how creative he is on the. He's just. He has all this creativity.
He's got it
like,
all going. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I'm like, you know what it takes for me to think of something? I'm like, huh. But he's like, I can do this, that. It's incredible to be gifted that way, man. I wish I could do stuff like that. That's, you know, that's awesome.
It's, yeah, I know. It's definitely a grind. And you also need, they say left brain, right brain. It's just certain, you know, people could come up with this stuff more naturally than other people. But that was informational. And I'm going to get the play in the field interns on that. They're gonna have to watch
the whole episode.
That last half an hour. Of course, the whole episode was great. But as far as like the TikTok and the LinkedIn and all that amazing advice, you know, that was like, I think we started at like the 40-minute mark, and now we're an hour 13 into this thing. I think
we can call it. Yeah.
I think that took the cake for the longest interview that we've ever had.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's much that we could do to top that.
Yeah,
so
I think we should leave it as is.
Yeah, that was an amazing episode. Thank you again to Hakeem Vallis for coming on and sharing the amazing stories of just him, you know, playing, the amazing knowledge that he just dropped, and the mic drop.
Yeah, and it's amazing how cutthroat. We don't realize as fans how cutthroat the NFL is, man. It's just it's crazy. But thanks for tuning in tonight, everybody. Great episode, Fan Experience TV. It's going to be a good sports weekend. March Madness starting, all the tournaments. And
we'll see if Russell Wilson gets traded over the weekend. Let's see.
Oh, man.
I doubt it. But we'll see you Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Until then, have a great weekend, everybody.
Peace.
Good night.